Remaker's Mark, Episode 60, Stir Crazy. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in the 60th episode where we are discussing the Sidney Poitier-directed comedy Stir Crazy. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight, and what is your favorite Prison Break movie?
I am fabulous. Thank you. And my favorite Prison Break movie will be Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Ooh. Interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good.
Once again, me co-opting Star Wars to fit my own purposes.
What's your favorite Western? Star Wars. What's your favorite sci-fi? Star Wars. Prison Break. Star Wars. Movie featuring a giant slug. Return of the Jedi. Correct.
What's your favorite French Algerian murderer political drama thriller? Star Wars.
What was the one that we did that was French Algerian?
What was the name of that? That's his second favorite one.
Oh, Z.
That's my second favorite French Algerian political murder thriller.
That's fair. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you tonight? And what is your favorite Prison Break movie?
I'm alive, and things are fine. I am that meme of the dog with fire all around him, holding a cup of coffee, saying this is fine. And my favorite Prison Break movie is probably Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, nice.
That's a good one.
Good choice. Lee, Harry, and Skip, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite Prison Break movie?
I'm pretty good, and I'll have to go with The Shawshank Redemption.
Nice. Low-hanging fruit, deservedly so.
Yep.
Classic. Yep.
Nice. Well done. And finally, Mark Josting, how are you, and what is your favorite Prison Break movie?
I am well, thank you. And Jer took mine, so instead of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, I'm going to say The Count of Monte Cristo.
Ooh, also excellent.
Is that Antonio Banderas? Am I remembering that right?
Jim Caviezel.
Jesus
and
himself.
Guy Pearce.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Man, I don't know if I've actually seen that one.
You should.
Duly noted. I will do so. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening, and mine is slightly indirect. And that is Chicken Run, which is basically a remake of The Great Escape. So instead of escaping a prison, they're trying to escape a farm. But, I mean, there's like scenes that are directly lifted, both shots and sound, from The Great Escape. And it is a better movie than The Great Escape, which is saying something, because Great Escape is a pretty great movie. But Chicken Run is just unstoppable. That's a movie that I can put on anytime and enjoy it as much as the first time I saw it, which is a lot of enjoyment, I will tell you that.
The Jeopardy question is, Star Wars, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and Chicken Run are all examples of this. What are Prison Break movies?
There you go. Perfect. Thank you. In honor of Alex Trebek, who you Googleized recently.
We did.
All right. So up next is Remaker's Mark Recommends. This movie was my pick, so I will be recommending. And today I'm going to not recommend a podcast, strangely enough. Rather, I'm going to be recommending a budgeting service. Wow, Kyle, that sounds exciting. You might be
tell me more.
I know. However, there is a amazing service called You Need a Budget, or YNAB, which is the acronym for it. It has pretty much changed my, not even pretty much, it has completely changed my budgeting life. You know, I was not usually the living paycheck to paycheck person, but I knew how much money I had before YNAB. And I kind of knew how much I spent, but I didn't actually know how much I spent. So there were a lot of surprises. So I wasn't the worst, but I was really bad at money. And in the last couple of years, I've been using YNAB, and it has completely revolutionized how I see money. Like, I'm not scared of it anymore. It's a huge thing. So if you find that that is you, that money freaks you out, or if you aren't a budgeter and would like to do so, I can't recommend it highly enough. I can't remember if it's YNAB.com or youneedabudget.com, but it is extraordinary. It's not free. It's, I think, like $80 a year. And I have like saved many, many, many times that over in just having smarter spending habits in my time. So to me, it's totally worth it. You get 34 days free, which sounds random, but it's basically you get a whole month and then a little bit more so that you can kind of see that transition from the beginning of the month to the end of the month, etc. But it is amazing. It's one of those things where I was kind of reflecting on that recently. I was like, man, that is like a life changer, literally. I can't even tell you how much less worry and anxiety I have about that. And money can be like the number one worry and anxiety thing when it is. And so that's a big deal. So I couldn't recommend it more highly. You need a budget. Definitely check it out.
So you're saying I should do that and not buy stocks in GameStop?
You could do both, and you could track the stock in You Need a Budget.
Okay.
Or, you know, maybe you would set aside, you know, a couple weeks ago, maybe $100, now several hundred dollars to get a bunch of GameStop stock. Boy, that's hard to say.
You can abbreviate that, but that's fine.
Yeah, GSS. Perfect. Yeah, it's so good. It really changed my life.
Or just dump it all in Bitcoin.
There you go. Dogecoin. That's where the real movement is at. Lee, speaking of Dogecoin, I got nothing. That's all I got. You are picking the next movie. So let us know what we will be watching next.
Well, sticking with our theme of directors of color, I'm going back to about the year 2000. And it's a directorial debut by a director by the name of Tarsem Singh. And it's a sci-fi thriller called The Cell, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, yes.
Nice. I've not seen it.
And some people classify it as a horror movie, but I really don't. It's more of a detective story that's mixed with sci-fi, starring Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn and Vincent D'Onofrio. And it's a very interesting look at getting into the mind of a serial killer. So it has some really great imagery in it. It's some gore, but you know, not too bad.
Yeah, visually that movie is bonkers.
Yeah. Almost bar none. There's very few things.
The poster looks like it's got like a Fifth Element vibe.
It's not a Fifth Element vibe.
Yeah,
it would be like if Silence of the Lambs, it was, if they, instead of Clarice like interviewing him, it would be her like breaking into his brain. That's basically this movie.
Silence of the Lambs and Lawnmower Man, if Lawnmower Man were cool.
Yeah. There you go. Cooler. I mean, it's cool, but
true. Okay.
You know, that's, this is cooler.
Yeah. It's a very good movie.
Yeah. I went to this in the theater and I was kind of blown away by it. I thought it was really good. So I think it'd be an interesting one to remake.
Yeah. Boy, howdy. Nice.
I'm excited to watch that.
Yeah. So Andy hasn't seen it. Mark, have you not seen it?
I've not seen it.
Okay,
oh,
cool.
This will be fun.
Yep. Three have seen, two have not. Sweet. Well, before we dig into our further discussion of Stir Crazy, let's do a quick overview of the recasting choices and what the winners were on that in part one. For the major characters, the role of Skip, originally played by Gene Wilder, we went with Lee's choice of Jason Mantzoukas. Good job,
yay.
Lee.
Yay. Yay.
For the role of Harry, originally played by Richard Pryor, we went with Andy's choice of Donald Faison.
Yay.
It was very nearly a Scrubs reunion. It was a tiebreaker between Mantzoukas and Zach Braff, and Braff just couldn't quite pull it off, but Faison sure did. And then for the major minor characters, it was a unanimous choice, 5 votes for Grossberger, originally played by Erlen van Linte, in my casting choice, played by Terry Crews, which I just want to see so much. Thank you very much. All right. So with that out of the way, now let us talk about the movie itself, what we liked about it, what we would change about it. Let's dig into the details of it a little bit. The first thing that we want to talk about is the kind of 80s comedy stylings of this movie. Jer, would you mind starting us off with that?
Surely, or rather, surely, if we're talking about 80s movies, that's a reference to Airplane.
Nice.
So this movie falls squarely into that category of 80s comedies that's just like out of control, sort of balls to the wall, kind of just like everything is happening all the time. But I don't think that it works like it does in other movies like this. We've done similar 80s comedies, I think, that I think have stood the test of time a lot better than this one. There's a lot of manic energy. Anytime you get Gene Wilder into a movie and then add in Richard Pryor as well, you're going to have manic energy. But I don't think that it, I don't think that it ends up, the it doesn't add up as well as it should when you put all of the pieces and add them together. I can't remember what saying that is. The whole is less than the sum of its parts. That's the saying. So the, yeah, there are scenes that feel like they are like skits, like Saturday Night Live skits that are kind of self-contained and they don't really go anywhere. They don't further the plot. They're just like, this is going to be a funny bit. And then this is going to be a funny bit. And then some of them are really funny bits and some of them are not. But yeah, it is all over the place in good and often bad ways.
Mm-hmm.
Jer, I liked your note. You know, you referred to it more as SNL skits, but in when we kind of talked about it in pre-production, we're planning this, you wrote that it feels like improv sketches that needed a few more takes. And I really feel like it has that energy. Like, you know, SNL certainly is up and down in terms of quality, right? But it's scripted. It has a feel of like what they did was on purpose, mostly, unless somebody breaks, which happens. But like, you know, it was very planned for in that moment, whereas this did not feel that way. It kind of harkens back to when we were talking about Fred Willard and the, you know, you go over to them and you distract them, right? And then he went off and did it beautifully. Whereas I feel like, you know, a scene of them pretending to go crazy when they realize they're actually in prison. I have a feeling the script says Wilder and Pryor go crazy, right? And then just left that to him. And I think as a result of that, that was that detachment to me. So I really do feel like it was leaning too hard on their sort of personalities.
And I don't know, both Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor are very funny comics. I don't think either of them are super great improv comics, or at least not that I've ever really known about or seen. And that scene, especially the go crazy in the while you're going to your cell scene, that felt like an improv suggestion that if I was watching an improv team do it, I would have been like, all right, next thing. I get it. It was weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure was. Another one that struck me was in the bar, in the town where they get arrested, when there are those two rednecks that are punching the speed bag, which is in a bar for some reason. And Gene Wilder's character decides to go over and talk to them. It was not quite charming. I feel like they were just trying to let the absurdity of Gene Wilder's character interacting with those guys who are just fuming at him, just let that be funny by itself. And it wasn't. And the scene didn't really go anywhere, didn't contribute to any plot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the idea was that he was so aloof, which I think was hoping to pay off, I guess, in him riding the bull or, you know, some of the stuff in prison. But like, it just didn't. It really, the whole thing felt disconnected. I agree.
Well, even his the introduction of Gene Wilder's character, where he's in the mall following that woman around, which is really weird. And he just, yes, like, he's very nonchalantly like, no, I work for the mall and you're shoplifting and it's great. And then he'll laugh sort of maniacally and then she'll say something and he'll laugh at her because of how funny she is. And it's like, you're waiting for the sort of punchline, like he's actually flirting with her or he's the one shoplifting or something to happen. And it was just like nothing ever came of it except in the next scene when he's like, well, I got fired. And it's like, what? Yeah. What?
Yeah, the other one that struck me as especially odd was towards the beginning before they go to the other town where they're hanging out in the restaurants and then that fight breaks out. Like, that one felt really strange to me as well. I didn't understand that at all, or I didn't find any purpose for that either.
And it felt like it was, all of it was really close to that sort of 80s energy that we really, really like in movies, but none of it hit. It was like swing, miss, swing, miss, swing, miss.
Yeah, I can see a lot of it trying to establish character. I think you mentioned that, Kyle, but a lot of the scenes don't do anything.
Mark, you had an interesting point talking about a comparison that I didn't think about in watching the movie, but now seems totally brilliant, which is Dumb and Dumber compared to this movie.
Yes.
Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. And I think there's a really strong similarity in the plot lines of those movies, minus the bull riding, but where you have, you know, two guys in the city who are, they, you know, their lives are kind of going nowhere and they're sick of it and they decide to leave. And they go on a road trip and shenanigans. And I think that's a movie that took a lot of those same sorts of jokes, like fish out of water sorts of things, and really did a much better job with it. I mean, I feel like there aren't any stray or random scenes in that movie, and everything serves a purpose, which is not what happens in this movie.
The jokes pay off.
Yeah.
When it's like true absurdity, it was not absurd enough. I felt like they tried to be over the top absurd and they just never got there. You know, I think some of the situations were absurd. Like the whole bull riding thing is absurd in and of itself. I think of like a Will Ferrell riding a bull, and he would just be Will Ferrell, who then happens to be riding a bull. And those two things, like that math checks out. Will Ferrell plus bull riding equals absurd. But like, it just never got there. Like it wasn't established where he was Gene Wilder, who is inherently, like we said, super funny. But yeah, for whatever reason, it just did not take.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff, instead of being funny, was more like, huh, that's odd.
Yeah. What are some scenes that you guys felt like it landed? Which were ones that that you thought were positive, since we've kind of, you know, been putting it down here? I thought the solitary confinement kind of montage, if you will, I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah, I like that one. And now that I'm thinking really hard about it, I can't come up with anything else.
Maybe some of the stuff with Jo Beth Williams.
Yeah.
I thought she was an interesting character, and a character, I guess, that I wanted to see a little bit more of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything with their lawyer, I thought was really funny, because of his lawyer was super weird, and I wanted to see more of him. But the scenes with them interacting with him, but then at the same time, it's like none of it again made sense. Like, why is any of this happening? But at least the dialogue got a chance to really kind of get into that sort of rapid fire style that Gene Wilder does really well.
Mostly he was just really creepy in those scenes. Like when he was inexplicably hitting on the assistant, or whatever, the assistant lawyer, paralegal, I don't know. Yeah, that was strange. But it did have a good, it brought a different energy, which was very much appreciated. I was glad for that. What did you guys think of like the end sequence, the eventual bull riding contest? How did that land for you?
Not well for me. You know, the whole, suddenly it's an espionage sort of movie, or a heist movie, and tone didn't fit well for me, and it didn't do a particularly good job of being that sort of movie. And when they finally get to the actual end of the movie, it came really suddenly and was really rushed.
There were parts of the prison break aspect of that I thought were fairly well done. Like I liked the scenes of like Grossman and Rory and Angel, what was his name? The other gentleman whose name I'm forgetting. Sorry. Where they were hanging out and kind of, you know, hatching their scheme. I thought that was pretty decent. And then I think the actual execution was pretty okay. I like that they brought in like the family. I thought it was clever. Like it made sense. I didn't roll my eyes or throw my hands up in the air at how it ended up happening. You know, it wasn't completely ludicrous to me, but, you know, it did feel as strange as the rest of the movie, but from a, you know, is this legitimate? Is this possible that someone could break out that way? I think it worked okay.
By the way, the character's name is Jesus.
Jesus, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, let's dig in a little bit more to Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. We've established some problems that we had with it, but we've also established how much we enjoy them overall. I think, you know, as far as two talented people, you don't find a lot of people in their age that are more talented than them. I mean, they are extraordinary. Richard Pryor is, if not the most gifted stand-up comedian of all time, certainly in the top three, or, you know, I mean, again, he's just highly regarded and did well acting. It was never quite as natural as his comedic work, but I think it was also because his comedic work was so edgy that, you know, the movie work just landed differently, or would just kind of scratch a different itch, as it were. And Gene Wilder, you know, I mean, from Willy Wonka, I think is probably the biggest reference for us, but a lot of other things as well. You know, it's interesting that they had so many pairings together, and especially so many pairings directed by Sidney Poitier. Again, kind of hearkening back to when I talked about picking this movie, it was very surprising to me how many they did together, you know, both the slapstick nature of it and how many they did together. So that was something I had no idea was the case. What else have you all seen with the two of them in there? I know we've established See No Evil, Hear No Evil. How many of us have seen that? And then what others have you guys seen?
I think that's the only other movie with those two that I've seen. And I think that's a much funnier movie.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I've seen that one, and I've also seen Silver Streak, which is also a very good, weird 80s comedy.
What's the premise of that one?
That one, they're on a train, and man, it's been 30 years since I've seen it. I think there's like either a heist or some sort of crime happening on the train, and they're either involved with it or they're trying to stop it. It's... All I know is it's on a train, and there's a big train crash in it. And I remember thinking it was funny.
So Snowpiercer 30 years ago. Got it.
Yes, exactly. I think that's pretty much, I don't think anybody could explain it better than that.
Perfect. Excellent. Andy, how about you? Have you seen any other ones?
I'm trying to think. I felt like I had, but as I'm hearing what you guys are talking about, I'm realizing I don't think I've seen those movies. I've seen a lot of Gene Wilder movies by himself and a couple of Richard Pryor movies by himself, but I think this might be the only one I've seen of them together. And it kind of sounds like we started at the bottom.
It does a little bit. So do you guys think this movie could be redeemable? You know, we often talk about changes that we would like to make, and we kind of can kind of blend that together a little bit. But what do you think would redeem this movie? What do you feel like it's too far gone, or do you feel like the premise is not sufficient? Like, how do you think this could work?
I think the premise at its core, just this idea of two sort of down and out guys with you know, one of whom is almost annoyingly positive, and the other one who's kind of the opposite, on this sort of comic road movie where they end up getting arrested. Like, that's the beats of that are definitely something that are similar to Dumb and Dumber and other kind of buddy comedies. I don't think that it's the vehicle that tanked this. I think it's some of the directing and some of the writing, sadly.
Yeah, I think there are some strong bones to this movie. It just needs... I blame the writing. I think it needs a more discerning eye on the script.
I think if we look at this movie from what it was with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, I think had they been given the vehicle to do what they do well, and and built around that, I think it would have been a much better movie. I think Gene Wilder succeeds when it's really good dialogue, or in something like Blazing Saddles, where he is the straight man to everything happening around him. But neither of those things really happened enough. I felt like it was sort of straddling the line between a lot of different things, and none of them, you didn't buy into any of them. And I think that if it had been written and directed differently to play to both of their strengths, I think that it would have been a much funnier movie.
Do either Richard Pryor or Gene Wilder have many writing credits to their name? I honestly don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because I think if either of them wrote this movie, knowing that it would be for themselves, I think it would have been much, much funnier. I just didn't find the jokes funny. And I felt like it was two very funny actors and comedians trying very hard to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. It just didn't work.
Gene Wilder has several writing credits, including Young Frankenstein, but not much good beyond that. See No Evil, Hear No Evil. He wrote the screenplay to that.
Did either of them have any of the writing to do with this one?
I don't think so.
Good. I was hoping I wouldn't just eat my own words there.
One thing that I caught on as far as things that I would like to make a little bit different in a remake of this is the character of Rory. Rory is kind of the, I guess it's stereotypical. I don't know. I feel like that it happens a lot where it's a kind of a effeminate gay man in prison who befriends a new person. I don't know. Is that a stereotype? Am I right? I feel like I've seen it enough that I could call it that.
There were plenty of prison stereotype characters in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. That's
that being probably chief among them.
Yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised at the amount of agency that they gave this character. You know, it was not a weak character by any means. Rather, he helped them survive literally and figuratively in so many ways. And, you know, I enjoyed the character for that, but I really feel like there was a lot of homophobia at the core of a lot of pieces of that, of Richard Pryor's character really, you know, it reacting in a way which was, you know, essentially rejecting the advances of a man. And I think it was done out of fear, not out of just like, hey, that's not how I roll, you know? So I feel like that's really an opportunity for things to be done a bit differently. I would love for them to continue with the agency of the character and continue to have the effect that he has on them. But I really feel like there's a way to do that in a more modern way. I feel like that can certainly reflect the 40 years that it's been and the 40 years and change of attitudes that have occurred in that time frame. So that was one thing that I caught on.
And I did like the fact that one of the very few parts that or cast members in the movie that were women was somebody who, and sadly, it was a love interest and a weird one, but also was the competent one, probably the most competent person in the movie.
Yeah,
I appreciated that they built that role as the person who was actually doing something positive to kind of help them get out of prison. How she and Gene Wilder should not have ended up together. That he should have ended up back in jail for whatever it was that he was doing to try to woo her. But I did appreciate that her character was not just, the token female, although there were not a lot of women in this movie, but that she did have, again, some agency and some, she was easily the smartest person in the movie and the most competent at what she was doing.
Agreed. What about the setting of it? Do you feel like the southernnessosity of it was okay? You know, you had kind of the warden and the deputy characters.
More Western than Southern.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, that's true. Yeah. But I feel like it kind of had that attitude. I mean, the actor who played the warden just kind of has that built in, or had that built in sort of accent to it. I don't know. Am I misremembering it? I felt like it was
that Smokey and the Bandit sort of.
Yeah.
It was a weird West Coast, like, or not even West Coast, but just West versus those sissy Eastern boys. Kind of thing that really I think may have been a thing 40 years ago, but I think today it just seems kind of confusing.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't even remember. Where did this take? Was this in Texas?
I don't believe they actually say.
No, I know this one. I think it might be Oklahoma.
So North Texas. No offense, Oklahoma.
Texas doesn't need to be any bigger. Thank you very much.
That's true. So that general range.
Yeah.
It was Arizona.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Yeah,
both. That makes South sense and too. West. Do you guys have anything else that you want to touch on? We've kind of made our way through the outline here before the rating scale. Anything else that you want to discuss?
I don't know. I would like to... I think that And we sort of the premise of this podcast is what if these movies were remade? I think this movie should be remade. I think that it should get a second chance, and I think that it would do really well alongside movies like Dumb and Dumber or even something like Pineapple Express, which is kind of a similar story as well about two guys getting in trouble with the law and the sort of action comedy that kind of is created from that. I think that it is something that is worth pulling back out and polishing off and trying again.
I agree.
For as much as we didn't like this, it's maybe notable that the budget was $10 million and it made $101 million.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was a huge hit.
Man.
Yeah, one of the reasons it's notable is because it was such a box office success. I think like the first big one for a black director.
Cool. I had no idea.
Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars out of 4 and said as it starts strong but loses its way.
Yeah.
I think we agree.
Yeah.
I don't know if it starts strong, but
stronger.
There are some strong parts. Let's see, what else? Vincent Canby of the New York Times said it's a prison comedy of stunning humorlessness.
You know what was my favorite scene of the entire movie?
What's that?
Was when Grossberger started singing.
Yeah.
That was such a sweet little moment. I don't care if it was overdubbed or whatever, but that was literally my favorite part of the entire movie.
I agree. That was a great part.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap it up with our rating scale. So we are going to rate as usual on a 1 to 10 scale of your choosing. So 1 being the worst movie you've ever seen, 10 being one of the best movies you've ever seen. And the scale is something that you will come up with as we go here. So, Andy, why don't you start us off here? What is your rating and scale?
Before I say that, we've remade some pretty terrible movies on this podcast.
Uh-oh.
Okay. But the other terrible movies that we've remade, maybe they knew they were terrible, or there was something about them that made the watching of it, like it was so bad. Not that it was good, but it was like, it was so bad that it was like, it's become interesting. It's so bad.
Would you describe that as campy?
Maybe. That might be the word.
You got enjoyment from the badness. You know, like Sometimes things are so bad that you get joy because it's so terrible.
Yeah.
Kiss Me, it's a Phantom of the Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Supergirl, Kiss Me, it's Phantom of the Park. Those are the first two that come to mind.
Those are really the only really bad movies that we've done.
But this movie was just bad. And I didn't like it.
It was dull. It was bad because it was dull.
It was dull. It was just, yeah. So I give this movie 1 out of 10 chicken costumes.
Woodpeckers.
Yes, woodpeckers.
Yeah, I think you.
I said the same thing last time. Yeah, it's even better, actually. Nice.
Our first 1-star rating.
Dang. Yeah. You know, we didn't do ratings back in the Kiss Meets Phantom of the Park and Supergirl era. So we don't have a direct comparison, but I feel like we'd have an idea.
I will say I would have rated both of those movies higher.
Yeah. Ooh. That's saying something.
Yeah. Jeremy, on to you. What is your rating and scale?
I'm going to give this movie, and my scale is going to be based on probably my favorite scene in the movie because it's the only scene that actually made me laugh out loud. I'm going to give this movie 3 out of 10 bags of oregano.
Damn it, Jer.
And I just have to point out in that scene that they put oregano on their salads.
Yeah. Like, who does that? Maybe it's an Arizona thing.
This was in New York.
Oh, yeah, they were in New York.
Lee, let's take it on to you. What is your rating and scale then, now that you've had yours stolen so brutally from
you? Yeah. I didn't absolutely hate it, but I didn't really like it either. I'm not going to watch it again, that's for sure. But I'll give it 4 out of 10 Dodge camper vans.
Nice. This is a good choice. And Mark Josting, how about you?
Well, I think this movie had moments, and I'll give it credit for those moments. I'm going to give it 3 out of 10 mechanical bulls that are in the warden's office for some reason.
That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. I will give it 3.3 torture montages, because enjoyable torture montages. How about that? That's a rare thing to be able to say that, but I really enjoyed how Gene Wilder did in those scenes where he's being like put in the hole and in the box. I thought that was actually probably my favorite scene or my favorite sequence in the movie. So yeah, 3.3 enjoyable torture montages, which seems like an oxymoron.
I feel like that phrase should be illegal, Kyle.
I know. However, here we are. This movie brings out the best slash worst in all of us.
I think that whole montage was easily the most Gene Wilder that this movie got.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's a good point. And it's like in that. Yeah. So it was focused, right? And that was great because it needed that focus. Everything else just felt too dispersed. Yeah. That's a great call, Jer.
And much like something like Blazing Saddles, it allowed him to just be the straight man to the weirdness around him. Like, he shouldn't be coming out of the box asking for more time because he's finding himself. Like, that's not funny, but he made it funny because he's Gene Wilder.
Yep. All right. Well, this was not our favorite movie. Sorry, / you're welcome. That's okay. You know, that's sweet. We don't really know what we're getting into with this, and I don't really think that many of us had seen it, if I remember correctly, if any of us. So, yeah, didn't know what we were getting into. That's just fine. I'm still glad we did it because, you know, maybe now we're going to seek out better Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder movies and see what those are. So, Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. We're also on Spotify, and now we're on YouTube. Search for Remakers Mark. We're on Facebook at Remakers Mark, Twitter at Remakers Mark, and Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. So, gents, we made it through a not great movie, and we're still friends, which is great because really that's the best part of all of this is just hanging out with you. I don't get to see you, and I don't get to like hang out with you so much, but I get to talk with you, and that makes me super happy. So this movie brought us together through good or bad. So until the next time that we can do that through good or bad in person, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
I have one more question. We don't have to add this to the podcast. Why was this movie called Stir Crazy?
That's a great question. I don't know. Man. Eggs? I guess. I really don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, the closest thing I can come up with is at the very beginning, the reason they left town is because Gene Wilder was sick of things and stir crazy. But
yeah,
that's all I got to.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And what is your favorite Prison Break movie?
I am fabulous. Thank you.